Montreal. No boundaries. Feel alive.
From Turtle Island to Palestine, occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine. You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
Welcome everyone, you are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Stay tuned. Last week, we focused on the US and their reaction to the latest escalation of violence in Israel-Palestine. In this week, I wanted to focus more on Canada and see how Canada reacted to the latest violence against Palestinians. While we saw the rise of strong voices of dissent in the US, whether among progressive politicians or even mainstream media, I was interested to see how did Canada fare in the whole thing. Are we still bending over backward to defend or ignore apartheid? Or are we finally aligning ourselves with international law and human rights law? Now, personally, from what I saw, I didn't see any surprising moments the same way we saw in the US mainstream media. There were more articles in Canada that I saw that are more open and less restrictive in what they say about the Israeli regime and their crimes. But in general, I didn't see it was that big of a change from the previous years or the previous coverage of attacks on Gaza, for example. So let's start first by seeing the political reactions and see how each main political party in Canada reacted. And after that, we can look more at the media and see what kind of discussions happened when it comes to Canadian mainstream media covering Palestine, Israel. First, let's focus on the Canadian government, the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, and see what was his initial reaction. And after that, we can see what were the reactions of the opposition parties in Canada.
Trudeau's response, just to kind of spoil it here, it's completely inadequate, but surprisingly moving in the right direction. First, once again, every event like this, it's the Israeli government doing the most amount of damage. Israel has what is called the Iron Dome. They're able to protect themselves from rockets that are coming in. So most of these rockets were intercepted, never actually hit anything. A few of them are, I guess, one or two got through, killed three Israelis. But for the most part here, the damage and the instigating is being done by this extremist Israeli government that is continuing to oppress Palestinians in a variety of ways. So the UN tweeting out here, Secretary General expresses his deep concern over continuing violence in occupied East Jerusalem. He urges Israel to cease demolitions and evictions in line with its obligations under international humanitarian and human rights law. So the UN here correctly recognizing and pointing out, as they often do, that it's the Israeli government here that is at fault. And there is very little coverage of this in general in the West because of the alliance that the West has with Israel. So they overlook this humanitarian crisis as a way to continue relations with Israel, instead of using their power, using that relationship to put pressure on Israel to stop oppressing Palestinians. Let's get to Trudeau's reaction. So again, I found this a bit surprising, but ultimately it, of course, does not go far enough. But here, check it out.
I want to ask you about what's happening in the Middle East. So Canada's policy on Israel and Palestine is predicated on the existence of the Oslo peace process. A lot of experts say that process has been dead for years and doesn't reflect the reality on the ground. The reality on the ground is renewed tensions. So with that in mind, what do you say to what we are seeing in Jerusalem as well as in Gaza? The exchange of rockets and airstrikes in which 9 children are among the casualties.
The violence and deaths we've seen in Israel right now and in the region are terrible. There needs to be de-escalation immediately. We need to see a cessation of violence and attacks. The rocket attacks from Hamas are absolutely unacceptable. But we're also gravely concerned about the settlements and the evictions of Palestinians. We need to see a return to conversations and dialogue and de-escalation, an end to the violence, including the violence at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which are just heart-wrenching. We need to see a path towards a two-state solution through negotiated conversations. Any unilateral, unhelpful actions on either sides are not contributing to the kind of future we all need to see.
So, a bit of a surprising reaction here. Actually calling out at least some of the Israeli government's human rights abuses, including the illegal evictions. So, and the actions taken at the mosque. So, I'm not impressed, but I'm surprised. At the same time, there is no meat on this bone. So, these are just words. There's nothing behind it. As Sam Hirsch here tweeted out, to be honest, not calling for an arms embargo and sanctions on Israel at this point is irresponsible government policy. But this is exactly what the Canadian government should be doing. It can't just be words. It can't just be acknowledging what the Israeli government is doing against Palestinians. There has to be some action behind it so that you can use your power as an ally to put pressure on Israel.
This is a clip from the Rational National, and you can see he was talking about how he wasn't impressed, but he was surprised by the words of the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. He also talks about how these things are just words, and unless there are actions behind them, they don't mean a thing. There's a reason why the Canadian Prime Minister is not believed and is called being hypocritical and his statements seen as empty. Since the election of Justin Trudeau, our government has shown complete support for the Israeli apartheid regime. In a recent CBC article, they say, and I'm quoting, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau maintained Stephen Harper's pro-Israel voting record at the UN, and a few months after becoming Prime Minister, he voted in Parliament to condemn BDS, which is the movement to boycott Israel. Also, when the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu asked the Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau to intercede to discourage the International Criminal Court, ICC, from investigating the 2014 Israel-Gaza war, Trudeau wrote to the court and said that the Palestinians, because they're stateless people, had no right to bring cases for war crimes. Also, the Toronto Star reminds us of more actions that the Trudeau government did to support the Israeli occupation. The articles remind us that first, Canada's refused to vote for a resolution and many resolutions at the United Nations General Assembly that condemn and are opposed to the occupation. Also, they talk about how Canada refused to insist even upon the minimal international human rights standards when it renegotiated the Canada-Israel Free Trade Agreement in 2018. Also, Canada was silent after Israel announced in 2020 its plans to annex significant parts of the occupied West Bank. They continue to say, and I'm quoting, "You will also not find any official statements by Canada in recent years which use the term occupation, thereby dimming the spotlights on Israel's responsibilities. Our government has found itself holding back the arc of justice." The article continues to say, "Perhaps the biggest hole at the heart of Canada's faux policy toward the Israeli occupation is our government's inexplicable stance toward the 250 Israeli settlements in East Jerusalem and West Bank. The profound illegality of the Israeli settlements is one of the most widely accepted points of agreement among diplomats and legal scholars. Under both international and Canadian criminal law, the settlements are a presumptive war crime. Yet, Canada's free trade agreement with Israel expressly allows settlement goods to enter our marketplace tariff-free. Israeli settlement wineries in the occupied Palestinian territories sell their vintages in Canada with the label, quote, product of Israel. When a concerned Jewish-Canadian professor challenged this labeling in the federal court, the Canadian government took the side of the settlement wineries." So this part was from the Toronto Star. So these are some examples of the long list of evidence that the current Prime Minister of Canada has always been a strong supporter of Israeli apartheid. Despite the continuous support of the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to Israeli apartheid, it seems that his stance is no longer unanimously accepted in the Liberal Party. Voices of disagreements are starting to appear. CBC explained in the recent article, "Some in Trudeau's party no longer seem willing to go along with that approach. Liberal MP Erskine Smith said the government is too tolerant of Israeli settlements. In April, Erskine Smith presented a petition calling on Canada to oppose the pending evictions of Palestinian families from homes in the Sheikh Jarrah districts of East Jerusalem."
Not seeing any hands up. The Honourable Member for Beaches East York.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I have a petition, e-petition 3031, that I'd like to present, signed by almost 1,400 residents who note that Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territory are unlawful under international law, that Israeli occupation authorities have issued a decision to forcibly evict hundreds of Palestinians from their home in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of East Jerusalem, and that forces have demolished many Palestinian homes in occupied Jerusalem since the beginning of this year. And they call upon the government of Canada to call on Israel to stop its eviction of the Palestinian families in Sheikh Jarrah and its carrying out of the announced land settlement of title and registration policy in occupied East Jerusalem, which will result in the permanent appropriation of Palestinian land by the State of Israel. Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker.
Now that we focused on the stance of the Canadian Prime Minister and the Liberal Party when it comes to Israeli apartheid, and saw that maybe voices of dissent and disagreement are starting to appear within the Liberal Party, it's important to next look at the opposition parties and see if they're doing any better when it comes to this issue.
Now let's get to some other leaders' reactions. So this is to the initial with the Israeli government going into the mosque there. So Jagmeet Singh reacted saying, "The threatened evictions of Palestinians in Sheikh Jarrah of East Jerusalem during the holy month of Ramadan or any other day is deeply troubling. Illegal occupation, demolitions, and forced evictions must end. PM Trudeau must take a stand and uphold international law." And keep in mind, this came before Trudeau's statement. It's possible that Jagmeet Singh, his wording here, potentially influenced Trudeau and how he reacted to the story as well. Nikki Ashton, also an NDP MP, saying, "Horrifying. Canada must step up as must other countries. Palestinian children are paying the ultimate price of the world's complicity in Israeli state violence." Matthew Green here, pointing out what I wanted to discuss, what I mentioned earlier. "Canada must suspend military exports to Israel. Hashtag Gaza under attack."
After the statement by the NDP leader, Jagmeet Singh, that was mentioned in the clip, the NDP leader later on asked the Canadian government to stop any weapon sales to Israel.
Mrs. Say, I couldn't let you leave without asking you again about the situation that's happening in Jerusalem and Gaza. We heard from the Prime Minister today. Yesterday, he kind of basically had comments that were very similar to yours. I'm sure you heard those. What more does Canada need to do to achieve peace in this region?
What's going on is very serious. And my heart goes out to the folks and the community members, Palestinians, that are struggling with horrible loss and extreme violence right now. It is very scary. And we've seen some of the reports, the images. It is shocking and it is horrible. And so what we're calling on, and what I'll be calling on later on today as well, is that Canada can play a stronger role. And Justin Trudeau specifically can play a stronger role. One of the things that we've mentioned and other human rights experts have said, we need to put pressure on Israel to engage in a peaceful resolution. And so one of those elements of pressure that we can place is making sure we're not selling arms to Israel that are being used in a conflict, which is breaching international law or violating human rights. So that's a concrete step we can take, something that I support and something that international human rights groups have said. We need to apply pressure so that we can encourage a peaceful resolution. We need peace. People in Israel and in Palestine have the right to live in peace, but we need to apply pressure to achieve that.
After the statement, NDP leader also challenged the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau at the House of Commons on May 13.
Violence in East Jerusalem is deeply disturbing. Demolitions, forcefully removing Palestinians from their homes, and blocking access to important gathering spots are all violations of human rights and international laws. Instead of taking action to stop or to deal with the long-standing illegal occupations, this Prime Minister is effectively supporting the status quo and going as far as to sell weapons to Israel. By arming one side of the conflict, it is undermining the peace process and it is supporting the illegal occupation. So will the Prime Minister commit to stopping the sale of arms to Israel while they are violating international human rights?
Right, Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, we are following the situation with grave concern. We call on all parties to end the violence, de-escalate tensions, protect civilians, and uphold international law. Rocket attacks against Israel are completely unacceptable, and Canada supports Israel's right to assure its own security. Violence at Al-Aqsa is also unacceptable. Places of worship are for people to gather peacefully and should never be sites of violence. We're also gravely concerned by continued expansion of settlements and evictions. Canada supports a two-state solution, and we urge all parties to renew their commitment to peace and security.
It's important to note that this stance by the NDP leader is new and does not reflect a long and courageous track record on Palestine-Israel. In the contrary, NDP leader has previously been accused of flip-flopping on this issue and continuously pandering to pro-apartheid activists. And although now he's calling for the Canadian government to stop selling arms to Israel, before that he did attack the BDS movement, which is the Boycott, Divestment and Sanction movement, as did the Liberal Prime Minister before him.
So I should reiterate really clearly, the official position of the New Democratic Party is that we do not endorse BDS. The issue has been raised in convention and was defeated in convention, and it is not a part of our policy. As leader, it is not something that I advance and I promote and support, in the sense that it is not the path to peace, that I don't believe it's a path to peace. And I also support the notion that it has, instead of helping achieve peace, it has perhaps the opposite effect in creating more tension and more division. And particularly as it plays out in student campuses, I think to Sophie's point, it has shown to create tensions and an unsafe climate. And so I agree with, I don't support it as a path forward. It's not the path I support for it.
While this clip clearly shows the NDP leader's previous attempts to smear the boycott movement and reject calls to sanction or boycott Israel, today Jagmeet Singh calls for sanctions on Israel by asking to stop selling weapons to the country. So what drove that change? This recent stance is only the result of increasing pressure from the NDP membership. Earlier this year, in April, during an NDP convention, party members overwhelmingly passed a motion to sanction Israel. The policy book of the NDP now includes a boycott of goods from illegal settlements and an arms embargo on the country. The Electronic Intifada reports, at that time, the NDP leader, quote, refused to publicly state that he agreed with his party's constituents. Instead, he just said he agreed with the demands from human rights organizations to apply, quote, pressure to get to a resolution, unquote. So obviously the pressure from his constituents is increasing, and Jagmeet Singh no longer can afford to avoid the topic or pander to the pro-apartheid lobby on this issue. Now let's look at the other opposition party in Canada, which is also seen as a more progressive party in comparison to the Liberals, the Green Party.
Green Party here with a horrible two sides approach, but I will give you a surprising response from another Green MP to this. But the Green Party of Canada official account here is saying, the Green Party of Canada calls for an immediate de-escalation in the violence and a return to dialogue as a means to seeking a peaceful solution. Quote, violence and confrontation will not bring resolution, only more suffering. It is a very, if you read the full statement, which is only, I think, like three paragraphs, it's a very basic both sides response. Doesn't directly mention the Israeli government occupying the Palestinians. Doesn't mention taking over, them pushing out Palestinians from their own land. Doesn't mention the attack on the mosque. Doesn't mention anything. It's a very both sides response. Very disappointing here from the Green Party leader, but also not surprising considering I covered this Green Party leadership race, and it was clear the entire time that Annamie Paul, this was not an issue that she was educated on or didn't care to be educated on or is educated on and doesn't care ultimately about Palestinian life. Whatever it is, clearly the Green Party here is not at all good on this issue. But after I get to this reaction, so this is from the Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East account here. The statement is worse than expected. It does not mention the forced evictions in Sheikh Jarrah. It does not mention Israel's violent assault on Al-Aqsa. It does not mention the children in Gaza murdered in airstrikes. We expect a far higher standard from the Canadian Greens. You have here a response to that criticism from one of the few Green MPs that exist. So Jenica Atwin here saying it is a totally inadequate statement. Forced evictions must end. I stand with Palestine and condemn the unthinkable airstrikes in Gaza. End apartheid. Hashtag save Sheikh Jarrah. Amazing. This is amazing. To see a sitting Green MP, and again, I think there's three of them. Two or three, but I think it's three. But you have here one of them actually calling it out. Calling out their own leader. So this is fantastic. You really don't see this in any other party.
According to the CBC, the Green Party leader, Annamie Paul, identifies as a Zionist. She has stated before to an Israeli media outlet that she has faced veiled discrimination because she is Zionist. Her senior advisor recently pushed this narrative further and accused NDP leader Jagmeet Singh and Liberal MPs of being anti-Semites. Paul Manley, who is an MP for the Green Party, responded by saying, and I'm quoting, I think using accusations of anti-Semitism to shut down legitimate criticism of human rights abuses is offensive and dangerous, and it dilutes the weight that word carries when it's used to identify real anti-Semitism, unquote. Manley also responded to the senior advisor of the Green Party leader by publishing an article by his friend and chief of staff, former Israeli soldier Ilan Goldenblatt, entitled, quote, criticizing human rights abuses is not anti-Semitism, unquote. Now that we covered the Liberal Party, the NDP Party, and the Green Party, all we have left to cover is the Conservative Party as the last main political party in Canada. Unfortunately, the Conservative Party position on the latest escalation of violence against Palestinians was not surprising.
Now, of course, we get to the worst of the worst. Canadian Conservative leader Erin O'Toole tweeting out, Canada's conservatives strongly condemn the frightening campaign of rocket attacks by Hamas. These terrorist attacks are indiscriminately targeting civilians and have already taken innocent lives. They must end immediately. Read my full statement. What the hell? I'm laughing because this is so ridiculous. It's what you expect from the Conservative Party, but my God, no recognition at all in terms of what the Israeli government has been doing this entire time, for decades what they've been doing, but also in this situation, in this event, what they've been doing. Yeah, obviously a ridiculous statement from Aaron O'Toole.
While the conservative reaction was expected, CBC notes that even among the conservative, there is a change in the air. In the same CBC article, they explain, quote, while the conservatives haven't changed their position on the topic, they have dialed back the volume. Support for Israel is no longer a staple of party fundraisers, and the foreign policy focus has clearly shifted to China. The Conservative Party isn't really seeking to highlight differences with Trudeau's Liberals on the conflict, partly because there really aren't any big ones.
Oh, no.
After we cover the Canadian political reactions to what happened when it comes to the escalation of violence against Palestinians, now I want to take a moment to focus on Canadian mainstream media to see how they covered the issue and if there were any changes. Last week, we highlighted a couple of surprising moments in U.S. mainstream media that is maybe indicating a start of a shift. So did we see the same type of shift in Canadian mainstream media? There was one clip that was circulating on social media that surprised many when a guest was allowed to speak and explain about the long history of ethnic cleansing of Palestine from the beginning of the 20th century until today.
This is not something you normally see in discussions around this issue, but maybe this is a sign of a positive trend. CBC, of course, Canadian network. This is going to be Janella Massa, host of Canada Tonight on CBC News. She had on Rami Curry for a refreshing discussion on this issue. Check it out.
But speaking specifically to what's happening in Sheikh Jarrah, which is kind of what sparked off this most recent round of violence, you know, some have likened that to ethnic cleansing. Israel calls it a private real estate dispute. What do you make of these very different characterizations of what's going on?
It is ethnic cleansing. Most of the world recognizes it as ethnic cleansing. It has been condemned by the United Nations, even by the Security Council, certainly the General Assembly many times. Nobody in the world, except one or two little microstates, supports the Israeli expansion into occupied Palestinian lands. There's been something like 620,000 Israelis who have been moved into colonies and settlements since 1967 in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. And this is what Sheikh Jarrah is part of. It's slow motion ethnic cleansing that's been going on for dozens of years. And the Israelis use different ways to do it. If a Palestinian spends too much time outside of Jerusalem, they take away the residence permit that allows that Palestinian to live in his or her ancestral home in Jerusalem. And these people become refugees. They can't go back to their homes. And that's one way they try to get rid of people. They forcibly expel people, like in Sheikh Jarrah. There are situations where settlers do this. There are situations, individual private thugs, situations where the Israeli army does it. So there's a variety of ways that Israel has used the Zionist movement in Israel over the last century to transform the land of Palestine, which had been around 1910, was 93% Palestinian and 6-7% Jewish, indigenous Jews who had always lived there. That ratio has completely reversed. What happened over the last century? Why did the majority of the Palestinians end up not being in Palestine? It's not just natural desire to immigrate. There is a process of forced eviction and expulsion. This is a war crime.
Now, when is the last time you've seen a discussion like this? For whatever reason, networks appear now more willing to represent the views of Palestinians and human rights organizations that have been calling out these abuses for years. So Rami Curry here, fantastic description and breakdown on what is going on. Great job here from Janella Massa to have on this guest and have an honest discussion around this issue.
Aside from this clip, a bit of shift was noticed in written mainstream media, where we can find more articles talking about the illegal settlements and the occupation. Some articles I even quoted during today's show. That said, this has been very timid and limited. Mentioning the occupation at this point is the bare minimum. So we haven't seen any bold statement and reports by mainstream media, the same as we saw in American mainstream media, when even an MSNBC anchor called Israel an apartheid state, plain and simple. This discrepancy is also mirrored in the difference between progressive politicians in Canada and progressive politicians in the US. For example, in comparison with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's statements and her calling Israel an apartheid state, Jagmeet Singh's statements and demands appears to be timid and the bare minimum. The Associate Professor of Sociology at Mount Royal University in Calgary, Mark Muhannad Ayyash, recently wrote an article on Al Jazeera talking about his recent experience dealing with Canadian mainstream media, especially CBC. So I will read his story. He writes, and I'm quoting, "On May 11, as Israel was unleashing its military machine in occupied Jerusalem and elsewhere, I was put in contact with CBC Radio Montreal, who were looking for someone to interview to discuss the violent events in Sheikh Jarrah. After offering myself to speak on one of their programs on the requested day of May 12, I was told that they would love to book me on the show. Alas, the person had to be specifically, and I quote, a Palestinian Montrealer. Apparently, it is their strict policy that all guests on the show had to be from Montreal. Moreover, I now had just 1 hour to search for the specific subspecies of a Palestinian. In 40 minutes, I found not one, but two Palestinian Montrealers able and willing to be interviewed. Fantastic. CBC Radio Montreal intimated, all within the hour too. We can't believe it. Thank you. The Palestinian Montrealers I found were so kind. They cleared their busy schedule for the time slots that suited CBC Radio Montreal, not just for the on-air interview, but also for the pre-screening interview. Schedule cleared, preparations made, wonderful. May 12 comes and goes, but there is not so much as an email or even a call from CBC Radio Montreal to tell this Palestinian Montrealer that they will not put them on the air or even pre-interview them. This story is far from an outlier. Over the span of 3 days, between May 11 and 13, I found for CBC, Palestinians in Palestine, Palestinian Canadian experts, Palestinian Montrealers, and Palestinians in Palestine who are not, quote, a journalist voice, but are just a, quote, local voice, whatever that means, but still I found one. And every time I found one of these ever more specific Palestinian subspecies, I was either simply ignored or told, no, today we are actually looking for another subspecies. And on it went. If it was not for the fact that this is structural concealment of settler colonial brutality and a form of harassment to the people who give up their time to find available Palestinian interviewees, as well as the Palestinians who dedicate hours for their time to prepare for the interview, these stories would only be comical. So this is Mark Muhannad Ayash. As I mentioned, he's an associate professor of sociology at Mount Royal University in Calgary, talking about the continuous frustration he had when it comes to dealing with CBC and Canadian mainstream media. I have to say, this article was not surprising to me. Believe it or not, I have heard these stories before. Throughout the years, as you know, I have interviewed many Palestine solidarity activists or journalists working on these issues and so on. And as much as they say on air, they're always telling me many stories off air as well. And this story is one of the stories I've heard before. A Palestine solidarity activist being contacted by a journalist and then scheduled for an interview, and the whole day was cleared up for this interview, and then nothing happens. In this case, actually, the journalist admitted to the guest that was never interviewed at the end that they actually wanted to do the interview, but they got the call from upstairs making it clear that no such interview will take place. So in reality, there are a lot of journalists who want to do their jobs, but the people on top of them, the editors, the administrators at mainstream media station, is not allowing them to do their job. Andre Domes, who is a contributor editor at Maclean's magazines, told The Intercept that he was disturbed by media coverage of Israeli attacks on Palestinian protesters. He said, and I'm quoting, "I was listening to the radio, watching news conferences and so forth. The most nuanced coverage I was able to get was in social media, which as a journalist should be embarrassing." Domes continues to explain that, like in many U.S. newsrooms, Canadian journalists are still dealing with the reckoning over coverage of marginalized communities sparked in part by worldwide protests last summer against police brutality. Numerous journalists were reprimanded for speaking up about these issues, but little has actually changed. He says, and I'm quoting, "So after having gone through all of that and knowing that nothing was done, why would anyone feel safe going to management and saying, I don't feel like the coverage on this particular issue is fair?" He continues to explain that many people are still reluctant to speak out, and he says, and I'm quoting, "Folks are willing to go so far, but they also have jobs and livelihoods." عدد على عدد كل يوم عم منزيد شوف فايدات الكترة والحرية مش بالإيد
يوم ما وعيت أنا بنت هاي البلاد بكاء أطفال وبسمة ولاد الأرض ثوبها أسود خيم علينا حداد بطلنا نعد أحياء صرنا نعد أموات وأنا بقول بيكفي عاد بدي أمسك قدري بكفي بيكفي عاد فهمي ومش فهمي عايشي ومش عايشي البحر ميت أنا وحدي طايشي مهتمي ومش مهتمي عارفي ومش عارفي طريق طويلي أنا لساتني باشي بكفي عاد بكفي عاد بكفي عاد وأنا ماسك قدري بكفي بكفي عاد بكفي عاد بكفي عاد وأنا ماسك قدري بكفي بكفي عاد من عم بيعد من عم بيشد من كياني عم بحاول انه يحد مين عم يكتر او مين عم ينقص من مصلحته انه الانسانية تفلس من بعمل مصاري من هادم داري من بهالحياة عم بحدد مصاري من قطع وصالي من بعد احبابي من قيله الحق ينهبلي حلالي ومالي مين المتحكم ومين متحكم اسمع صوت الارض بتقول وبتتكلم مش اصلا احنا للارض ومن الارض احنا مش اصلا احنا للارض ومش الارض النا مش اصلا احنا للارض ومن الارض احنا مش اصلا احنا للارض ومش الارض النا بكفي عاد بكفي عاد بكفي عاد وانا ماسك قدري بكفي بكفي عاد بكفي
The frustration of Canadian journalists is increasing in Canada. 2,000 Canadians recently have signed a letter demanding better coverage on Israel-Palestine. Many things were explained in the letter, and I'm going to read as much as I can from it, so bear with me because I do think it's important to hear the voices of Canadian journalists and what they go through in mainstream media. The letter starts by saying, "The Middle East is complicated. We need to hear both sides. Everyone has a lot of emotions about this." These are just some of the excuses news editors have provided to Canadian journalists trying to cover the escalating violence against Palestinians. As journalists, we cannot selectively choose which international human rights violation to report on. Our industry rallied to properly cover the Black Lives Matter protests after the brutal police killing of George Floyd, and after the disproportionate impact of the pandemic on marginalized communities at home and around the world. We are learning to report on indigenous experiences and issues in a nuanced way that recognizes the long historical impact of colonialism. Why shouldn't Palestinians be afforded the same nuance? According to the UN and countless human rights organizations around the world, including ones based within Israel, what's happening in the occupied Palestinian territories is a grave breach of international law. Some groups believe the attacks amount to an ethnic cleansing. It should be covered as such. This procession is not complicated. Violence against innocent civilians and children is not complicated. Police aggression and state-sanctioned racism is not complicated. Journalists cover these issues all the time, so why do we tiptoe around coverage of Israel and Palestinians? Anyone who has worked in a Canadian newsroom has encountered reluctance or resistance to covering Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories. Canadian style guides still ban the use of the word Palestine in coverage. This has led to many corrections over the years. Racialized journalists have reported feeling overly scrutinized or even censored after every story pitch on this region. Unfortunately, newsroom leaders are skittish, fearing the deluge of complaints that often follows coverage. This leads to urgent breaking news coverage that never includes the context that surrounds the issue. A recent Al Jazeera column highlighted only two Canadian publications reported on a new Human Rights Watch report that found Israel was guilty of decades-long crimes against humanity against Palestinians, Canadian Press and the Globe and Mail. The CBC did not have any coverage on the Human Rights Watch report. Derek Stoffel, the CBC's World News editor and former Middle East correspondent, explained the silence by saying that his newsroom did, quote, not have the reporter resources on this day to devote to it, unquote. This is part of an open letter signed by 2,000 Canadian journalists. Sometimes it's very hard to read this and not laugh. Derek Stoffel, let me point that again. Derek Stoffel, according to the letter, the CBC's World News editor, said that he did not cover the Human Rights Watch report because apparently that day he did not have resources to devote for it. In an article on Al Jazeera, they explained that while CBC ignored the Human Rights Watch report about Israelis' violation of human rights of Palestinians, a week later they did a full-length story about the dog of Barack Obama. In this article called For CBC, a Dog Story is More Important Than Israel's Apartheid, they also explain how on January 2020, CBC did a story about another Human Rights Watch report. This time it was about China's human rights abuses. 3 years ago, CBC also did a 22-minute documentary about the human rights abuses of Russia. So when pro-apartheid activists tell you that Israel is being singled out, that's true, but not in the way they like you to believe. While other countries are continuously reported on, Israel is continuously shielded from any criticism in mainstream media in the West. So how did mainstream media in Canada responded to this open letter signed by 2,000 Canadian journalists raising concerns about the bias of mainstream media against Palestinians? Did this letter finally start a conversation about how to cover news related to Israel-Palestine in a more just, fair way that explained the context? It seems that some journalists who signed the letter were reprimanded instead. According to Rabble.ca, three journalists who signed the letter have already been sidelined. Two of them work at the CBC. This was due to pressure from a pro-apartheid group that accused the letter of being anti-Semitic and demanded that the news organizations bar anyone who signed the letter from reporting on Middle Eastern affairs. The pressure seems to have worked. John Miller, the author of this article, explains. As a former newspaper editor, I know that news coverage of the Middle East has for a long time been rigorously monitored by pro-Israeli advocates who often appear uninvited in newsrooms to complain about what they call anti-Semitic bias. Now they do it online. It is distressing that some news executives, such as those at the CBC, have heeded their demand. The letter does not take sides. It merely reminds Canada's news executive to stick to universally recognized journalism principles of fairness, accuracy, and context. As we mentioned before, pro-apartheid activists are tirelessly trying to bully journalists and media outlets to stop them from criticizing the Israeli government. And their pressures sometimes work. It is important to counter that pressure and to let mainstream media know that we are watching as well, and pro-apartheid narrative and coverage is no longer okay. I will read this section from Mark Muhannad Ayash article that I referenced earlier on the show. He says, and I'm quoting, "Within media landscapes in Canada and beyond, there are, of course, courageous and conscientious journalists who are working extremely hard to break through the wall of silence and tell Palestine's story to their audience. They are everywhere. They are working within mainstream media, within CBC News, and some are creating their own media platforms and succeeding at it. We all should support these journalists, both the independent ones and those who are working from within the mainstream. When they break through, when they put a Palestinian on the air and give them actual time to speak and explain the situation, when the journalist's own language and how they frame the events on the ground moves away from the misleading cliches, this is when we need to stand behind these conscientious and real journalists. Write to your news stations, tell them that you appreciated the work of such journalists. Ask them to do more. Help these journalists break the silence and break the fear barrier."
The United Nations Human Rights Chief, Michelle Bachelet, the former president of Chile, says Israel may have committed war crimes during its 11-day bombardment of Gaza, which killed at least 253 Palestinians, including 66 children. Bachelet spoke before the United Nations Human Rights Council.
Such strikes raise serious
arms and ammunition for its widely reported war crimes and crimes of apartheid against the Palestinian people. Let us be clear, there is no legal and moral equivalence between the occupier and the occupied.
The Biden administration has vowed to help rebuild Gaza, but at the same time, it's moving ahead with a plan to sell $735 million worth of bombs to Israel, despite congressional opposition. Earlier this week, the Norwegian Refugee Council, which works in Gaza, revealed 11 of the children killed in the Israeli bombing of Gaza were taking part in a program to help them deal with trauma from previous Israeli attacks.
The Canadian press reported that the Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, is committing to provide $25 million to Palestinian civilians living in Gaza Strip and the West Bank. Responding to this news, CJPME, which stands for Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East, reminded the Canadian Prime Minister that this money doesn't come close to the ongoing support that Canada gives to Israel's occupation and war industry, which is creating the humanitarian crisis in the first place. CJPME has three demands that they think are far more effective in helping Palestinians. The first demand is ban arms sales to and from Israel. Canada has exported at least $57 million worth of weapons to Israel since 2005. This includes $16 million in bomb components. Demand number two, cancel the $36 million contract to purchase a drone from Elbit Systems. Elbit Systems is Israel's largest weapons company. With this contract, Canada is boosting the profits of Israel's war industry. The third demand, stop trade benefits for illegal settlements and suspend the Canada-Israel Free Trade Agreement. This two-way trade between Canada and Israel is worth $1.8 billion in merchandise and $634 million in services. Under this agreement, illegal settlers in the occupied East Jerusalem and the occupied West Bank get to benefit from preferential trade access to Canadian markets. CJPME ends by saying, I'm quoting, "We can't continue to fund Israel's murderous occupation and oppression of Palestinians and then pretend that a small amount of humanitarian aid is going to make a difference. Fund Palestinians, defund the occupation, defund apartheid." And that's it for us for today. You were listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. My name is Sausan Kadura. Thank you very much for listening. Make sure to tune in next week. And until then, I wish you a free, free Palestine.
Did you get vaccinated?
Not yet, but I will soon.
And which one are you getting?
I'm getting the dance vaccine.
The dance vaccine? Great idea.
Yeah, rehearsing with the girls is what I miss the most.
Well, it's gonna be the soccer vaccine for me. I can't wait to see the gang again.
Each vaccination brings us closer to these moments. Follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Okay, I gotta let you go. I have to get my Lake Magog vaccine.
Your Lake Magog vaccine?
Yeah, you know, I'm really looking forward to having the whole family to the cottage for my annual cookout.
Smart move. I'm gonna ask for the Montreal vaccine. I miss those last-minute get-togethers with my buddies.
Nice. Well, I gotta run. I don't think it protects against lateness.
Each vaccination brings us closer to these moments. Follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Hey, je vais te laisser. Je dois recevoir mon vaccin Lac des Îles.
Ton vaccin Lac des Îles?
Ben ouais, tu sais comment j'ai hâte d'organiser mon barbecue au chalet avec toute la famille?
Pas bête, ça. Moi, je vais demander mon vaccin restaurant. Ça me manque les soirées improvisées avec les amis.
Hey, moi, j'y vais. Je pense pas qu'il fonctionne contre les retards, ce vaccin-là.
La vaccination nous rapproche de tous ces moments. Suivez la séquence de vaccination prévue dans votre région et prenez rendez-vous à québec.ca/vaccin-COVID. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Toi, ton vaccin, tu l'as eu?
Non, pas encore, mais ça va pas tarder.
Et tu l'as pris pour quoi?
J'ai pris le vaccin Danse.
Le vaccin Danse? Trop bonne idée!
Ouais, m'entraîner avec les filles, c'est ce qui me manque le plus.
Ben moi, le mien, ça va être le vaccin soccer. Je suis vraiment impatiente de retrouver toute la gang.
La vaccination nous rapproche de tous ces moments. Suivez la séquence de vaccination prévue dans votre région et prenez rendez-vous à québec.ca/vaccin-COVID. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
The following is a previously broadcast program.